What's going on, Eagles fans? Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, week two here of the dead period of the NFL offseason. I'm going to get you through it right here on Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase here joining you. If you missed any of last week's shows, had a really awesome post-draft week of podcasts, make sure to subscribe on any platform or go to LockedOnEagles.com. Today, this week, starts another crossover edition of Locked On Eagles. All throughout the week, we're going to be talking with some of the best hosts across the Locked On NFL channel, all the Eagles opponents, as the schedule does come out this week, and we'll get into the schedule later on this week as well on the show. So really excited to get into another crossover edition of the Locked On Podcast Network this week. Today, we're going out of conference. We're going to head over to the AFC North. The Eagles, they got a pretty tough schedule actually in 2020, and that's going to continue to happen if they keep, you know, making the playoffs and finishing atop the NFC East. But the AFC North, look, one of the most consistent divisions in the NFL throughout the last couple decades, and they had the best team in the NFL, at least from a regular season standpoint, come out of that division last year. And my boy, Mr. MVP, Mr. former Heisman, Lamar Jackson, getting into year three with the Baltimore Ravens. It's Carson Wentz versus Lamar Jackson this year. I cannot wait for that matchup. Today, I'm going to hang out with Locked On Ravens host, Kevin Ostreicher, and we're going to get into some of, we're going to talk about the game. Of course, it's a long ways away. We don't even know when that matchup's going to be, but I thought the Ravens had a really interesting draft. I think the way they've built their roster is very similar to the Eagles at quarterback, their offensive philosophy, their defensive philosophy, and both head coaches come from the Andy Reid coaching tree with John Harbaugh and Doug Peterson. So we're going to get into it with Kevin Ostreicher in segments two and three, getting into a little Eagles-Ravens crossover. It's fun. I've never actually done this on the Locked On Podcast Network, where I've had a crossover, of course, with all the NFC East hosts, but outside the division, it's only been during the regular season. So this is going to be fun to do that in the offseason here and head over to the AFC. So that's coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. But before we get into that, I want to talk about the backup quarterback position again. I know a lot of people think it's beating a dead horse, but when your general manager, Howie Roseman, keeps saying stupid things about it that national media clickbait artists can take and run with for weeks, you got to keep talking about it. And especially, too, because the Dallas Cowboys just made a signing at their backup quarterback spot that I wish the Eagles would have made. So for those of you that weren't paying attention to the sports world over the weekend, maybe you're just enjoying your time off, and I actually missed this. I missed the initial first wave of reactions. The Dallas Cowboys signed Andy Dalton, former Cincinnati Bengals starting quarterback for what? He was drafted in 2011. So for 9 years, Dalton was the Bengals starting quarterback, went to the playoffs four times. The Dallas Cowboys signed him to be Dak Prescott's backup in 2020. The deal is worth $7 million for 1 year, but only $3 million is guaranteed. And some I saw on Twitter are saying this is a bad move compared to the Eagles drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round. I honestly think, though, it's only because this is Dallas. We all hate the Cowboys, so any move they make is a terrible decision. But honestly, this is the move I wish the Eagles would have made. And I think if, let's say, the Baltimore Ravens, who we're doing the crossover with today, if the Baltimore Ravens, let's say they don't have RG3 and they bring in Andy Dalton behind Lamar Jackson, I think most Eagles fans say the same thing I'm saying is, I would have rather did that than take Jalen Hurts in the first round. But I think because it's, or the second round, but I think because it's the Cowboys, Eagles fans are kind of taking it and making fun of it, some at least. For me, though, a starting caliber quarterback who proved he can win at a certain level with good talent, he's a high quality backup. Having Andy Dalton as your backup quarterback, you have, if not the best backup quarterback in the NFL, you have one of them. And you're getting him for only $3 million guaranteed next year. I mean, I would much rather have a veteran who's played in four playoff games. Granted, not very good in those playoff games, but he, in the regular season, with good talent, has been able to perform at a certain level. In fact, it, what was it, 2015, I think? 2014 or 2015, the first 8 weeks of the season, he was playing at an MVP level. So to have that as your backup for only $3 million, I'll take that. With what the Eagles have on offense and what they have with their coaching staff and Doug Peterson as a play caller, I think Andy Dalton with $3 million and a four-year inexpensive contract for somebody like Christian Fulton or Willie Gay Jr. or Joshua Uche, right, or Jeremy Chin, to get Dalton and one of those guys at pretty much, when you figure a rookie contract for a second-round pick, what, $4-5 million you're going to spend total? instead of spending a 53rd overall pick on Jalen Hurts. I don't think this is even close. I think the Dallas Cowboys got this right. And it's not. This isn't the only move like this. You know, I know some are going to point to the Taysom Hill contract with the Saints and say, you know, you're not going to get backups like this for $3 million. I don't know, man. The Saints just paid Jameis Winston for what? $1 million? Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston, two starters last year and over the past few years that can throw the football. Not at a super efficient level, but they were starters. And you could get them for absolutely nothing and keep such a high, valuable asset like a second-round pick at 53 overall and spend it on a player that's actually going to help your star quarterback in Carson Wentz, either on offense or defense, for 4 years, making absolutely nothing. So, again, I get the long-term mindset with Hurts, but you don't know what you have there. And if there's cheap vets available, I mean, there's going to be cheap vets available every year. I know Hurts you have on a four-year deal, and Andy Dalton's only a one-year contract, Jameis Winston. Those guys are going to want to be starters eventually. But each year, players like this arise. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, Nick Foles. I mean, next year, what's it going to be? Mitchell Trubisky might have to be a backup for a year. Like, there's going to be Mariotas and Winstons, like, every year. Tyrod Taylor's a backup on the open market next year. Who else? Ryan Fitzpatrick is a backup. Jacoby Brissett. These are all free agents in 2021. And still with Nate Sudfeld. I know Sudfeld and Howie Roseman says he eventually wants to run his own team. Nate Sudfeld, I'm sorry, man. Like, if there was a market for Nate Sudfeld to be a starting quarterback, he would be there already. I don't know how there could be that market for him. I know he's coming from a QB factory, quote-unquote, to use one of Howie's terrible quotes from the past couple weeks, but the dude has played in a couple snaps throughout his entire career. So for me, even Nate Sudfeld, who I think can be a high-quality backup, could still be available moving forward in 2021, even though he only is on a one-year deal. So for me, those veterans, like a Dalton or a Winston, they're proven compared to Hurts. So I think those guys are better options for 2020 if Wentz were to go down. And they also don't come with the certain expectations. They don't stop you from getting a good prospect in the second round. And they don't bring this distraction. There's no way to piss off Carson Wentz with this move. There's no way for the national media to take this and spin it. There's no reason for Howie Roseman to have to go on a week-long radio tour to justify a pick like that. You could have Andy Dalton and Jeremy Chinn, who was apparently going to be the pick according to Albert Breer, if it wasn't Hurts. And some will say that Jalen Hurts is the better move. I don't get it. Maybe I see too many people that really like this Eagles draft class, including myself. But because of that, they're talking themselves into the Jalen Hurts pick in the second round. They're trying to justify it based on other picks. If you put it in a vacuum, that to me was the wrong pick. And I know you guys think this is beating a dead horse. But when your general manager keeps saying stupid things about the topic, and then Dallas makes a move that Philadelphia really should have made themselves, it's going to be brought back up. My job is not to be an Eagles fan. I am one, off the mic. But here, my job is to analyze and critique when necessary Howie Roseman's decisions. I love what he's done this offseason, through free agency and through the draft. But I thought letting Malcolm Jenkins go was a mistake. I thought drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round was a mistake. And when Roseman's going on the radio and saying he wants two top 10 quarterbacks and that's the plan, and he's calling this a quarterback factory, like when he keeps going back and forth, he's going to get criticized. It was perfect. On Thursday, he said the team is married to, in an interview, the team is married to Carson Wentz. Like, don't get it twisted. Wentz is the guy moving forward long term. You should have just stopped there. But he had to keep talking. Because I think he loves it, to be honest. I think Howie Roseman really likes to talk with these interviews. I know he doesn't do it a lot, but when he does, like, he is very informative. He's very entertaining. But he's also prone to give out quotes like the QB factory and wanting two top 10 quarterbacks. You don't need two top 10 quarterbacks because you've got one, and he's 27 years old. Maybe you need two if one's 35 years old, not when one's 27, not when it's Carson Wentz. So, again, trust me. I understand wanting a top-quality backup, but justifying it by saying they've missed on late-round guys like Roseman did last week, I don't accept that either. Because instead, your plan is to risk missing on other guys, like other prospects late in drafts. So because you missed on Clayton Thorson last year, you take Jalen Hurts in round two this year. A much higher percentage chance of landing on Jalen Hurts than Clayton Thorson. A second-round pick versus a fourth-round pick, you have a better chance of that second-round pick just being a better player. It's just, that's the NFL. That's draft logic. But use the logic here, though. We wanted to make sure we have a top-quality backup, so we took one in the second round here instead of the fifth. But instead, now you're risking, instead of taking Jeremy Chinn in the second, trust me, I love Kayvon Wallace, but taking a safety in the fourth round versus taking a safety in the second round guy, most of the time, is going to be a better player. taking Joshua Uche versus Casey Tuhill out of Stanford, the odds are the second-round pick is going to be better. So they're using that logic for the backup quarterback, but that reasoning Howie Roseman gave last week is the reason it's a bad decision. Because what John Hightower could be in the fifth round, the odds are Denzel Mims in round two, not the wide receiver I would have took one, but like for comparison again, to use this analogy. Denzel Mims, he has a better chance right now at least of being a better prospect compared to John Hightower. He's a second-round pick versus a fifth-round pick. Not saying that's always the case. There's first-round busts, there's second-round busts, but you have a better chance at landing a top prospect in the second round. And how he knows that, it's why he justified the Jalen Hurts pick. So just the distraction again, what comes with picking a backup in the second round, with already all of the clickbait culture around Carson Wentz and the awful narratives. For me, I would have much rather have taken an Andy Dalton or signed a Jameis Winston. The Dallas Cowboys did it, and I think it was the right move. All right, coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles, we're going to hang out with Locked On Ravens host Kevin Ostreicher. The Eagles play Baltimore this year in the 2020 regular season. The schedule does come out this week, so we'll know specifically when they play the Ravens later on this week, and it will be at Lincoln Financial Field. I want to talk about my guy Lamar Jackson. I want to talk about how this Ravens offense is constructed. Very similar to the Eagles. These are two teams that I think have a lot of the same beliefs in roster construction on both offense and defense. So I think this is going to be a whole lot of fun with Kevin Ostreicher. Don't go anywhere. This is Louis DiBiase of Locked On Eagles. Guys, we'd like to thank our friends at Built Bar for sponsoring today's Locked On Eagles, the best protein bar you can find. And honestly, if you didn't know it, you wouldn't even know you're eating a protein bar. You'd think you were eating a straight chocolate bar. My favorite, I don't know if I'm weird for being this way, but I'm a big orange chocolate guy. And they have an orange chocolate flavored Built Bar, and it's fantastic. It's so good during workout days. Love to eat it. It's just such a healthy alternative snack. My girlfriend right now is really liking the peanut butter ones. There's flavors for everyone's taste buds. They're soft, chewy, and they're coated in chocolate. That, of course, is the best part. Anyway, it's a great source of protein, 15 grams in each bar. It's such a good healthy choice, as I said, with their low calorie, low sugar, but high fiber and protein ingredients. All you got to do right now, go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. That's right, $10 off your first order at Built Bar. Use our promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back in, everybody, to another edition of a crossover edition, actually, of the Locked On Eagles and Locked On Ravens podcast. Louis DiBiase here of Locked On Eagles alongside Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. Kevin, what's going on, man? NFC and AFC crossover here, so I've never had the pleasure of talking to you on the podcast, but I always follow you on Twitter. I'm a big Lamar Jackson guy. Really enjoy what the Baltimore Ravens have been doing the past couple years, so I've really enjoyed your content, but it's good to talk to you, man. It's going to be a fun matchup, you know, in a couple months when Carson Wentz and Lamar Jackson duke it out.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Louie, and I think that with this, you know, crossover stuff with the NFC East, the AFC North, I think two conferences that maybe get a little bit disrespected and are deemed more of the weaker of the AFC and NFC sure. conferences, but I think it's the opposite, personally. The AFC North, very strong. The NFC East obviously got very powerful through the draft, so I think it's going to be a fun matchup as well.
Yeah, it's actually, when you look at it, the AFC North, I mean, what, the Steelers have a couple Super Bowls, you guys have a couple Super Bowls in the 21st century, the Eagles have one, the Giants got a couple, so yeah, they're actually two of the more consistent divisions.
Yeah, two very underrated divisions, and I think that with all of the quarterback talent that's now in both of the divisions, I mean, the Browns and the Bengals both getting stronger at the quarterback position mm-hmm. over the last few years alongside the Ravens, then you have the Eagles, who we'll talk about their, I guess, controversial pick later, but right. the NFC East and AFC North have a plethora of very good quarterbacks.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, Lamar Jackson, Carson Wentz, I think these are elite young quarterbacks that have honestly, look, Kevin, I think although these are two teams in completely different conferences and different divisions, I think their rosters are constructed very similar. I think their quarterbacks deal with a lot of the same ridiculous narratives, or at least maybe not the same ridiculous narratives, but they both deal with a lot of, I think, awful criticism for things that are just not warranted. And I don't know, I think both are going to take an even bigger step next year. These are two of the quarterbacks that are going to be the face of the NFL that already are, and they're the type of quarterbacks teams want now. You look at it, I mean, the Ravens go from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson. I mean, the Bills take Josh Allen. You know, of course, Kyler Murray in Arizona, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott. It's a league that wants quarterbacks now that can move, that are elite runners, that can throw on the run. I mean, they want weapons as quarterbacks now. It's not often that you see a team invest a whole lot in a, you know, like a Jared Goff anymore. So I think the Eagles and Ravens, they both are constructed in a very modern NFL type of way, especially at the signal caller spot.
Yeah, you mentioned those unfair criticisms. You talk about Lamar Jackson, who ever since really coming into the league has been, oh, he's a running back. He's a wide receiver. Yep. He can't throw. He's not accurate. His play has been, you know, just put under a microscope ever since he got into the league. And even going back into college, and with Carson Wentz, it's, oh, he's too injured. He gets injured every other play. He wasn't the one who led the Eagles to the Super Bowl. It was Nick Foles. A lot of controversy with both quarterbacks, but I totally agree with you, Louie. I think that these quarterbacks are both poised to take a very big step in the world for Lamar Jackson year three, and for Carson Wentz, a big year for him as well, obviously getting injured in that playoff game. Again, a lot of that criticism coming back up. So I think they both respond to it pretty well.
Yeah, they're two of the three quarterbacks the last three seasons that have, there's been that second year leap that has put players either in the MVP conversation or guys that have won MVP. You know, Wentz in 2017 nearly won it. If he didn't get injured, he would have won it. Then, you know, you got Patrick Mahomes in 2018 and Lamar Jackson in 2019. But yeah, man, it's true. Like, these are should be two of the last three MVPs. And yeah, with Lamar Jackson, it's all that same, you know, he's a running back or wide receiver stuff that all started with Bill Polian. And last year, he really put all of that to rest. And now, I don't know, maybe now it's the conversations about his performances in the playoffs, which I think is another bad criticism and narrative. And with Wentz, you know, you talked about the injuries, the full stuff, and it was also, oh, the kid played at North Dakota State. You don't know what he's going to do at the NFL level. He couldn't win a big game. That was all the talk last year. Like, he had never had a really impressive win down the stretch. He's not a clutch performer. There's so much stuff about it. He was a bad teammate off the field. I don't know. I feel like these are two of the players that we should all be praising as, like, two of the stars of the league. And I feel like most smart football fans and media members do, but I mean, there's just so much unfair, like, ridiculous. I guess it's maybe just clickbait, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, it's really just how they respond to it. And I think that with Lamar Jackson, from what us Ravens fans have seen, is he just puts in the work. And for Carson Wentz, I believe it's no different. You know, while Baker Mayfield was out there putting out commercials, that's a thing I like to use a lot because, you know, the year two leap for both of those players, Baker Mayfield, it wasn't really a leap. It was more of a regression. How much of that you can put on Freddie Kitchens, who knows? But for the Ravens and for Lamar Jackson, there was constant just an outpour of, you know, news and sources and videos of him working really hard to improve his footwork, improve his accuracy.
Sure.
And to get better as a player, he is hungry for this, not only of himself, it's really not about himself for Lamar Jackson. It's about his team. He will do anything for his teammates, anything for his coaches, a really good player to be around in the locker room. And for a guy who gets so much criticism on a daily basis, for me, it's impossible to hate the guy just based off of everything he's done, not only on the football field, but off of it as well for the Baltimore community.
Well, that's what I don't get. I mean, these are two standout guys. They're great teammates. Anyone that I hear talk about them, like, inside the locker room, only have glowing things to say. And you look at the organizations, like, they at least believe in them. Like, the Ravens clearly believe in Lamar Jackson, the way they're building their roster, they're constructing it, the way they have formed their offense from Joe Flacco to Lamar. It's so completely different. You know, in 2018, it was all read option and run-oriented around Lamar. And then this year, yeah, when Lamar worked on his passing ability, It really opened up under Greg Roman. And I think it's the same thing with Carson Wentz. I mean, the Eagles chose Carson Wentz. They, even though Nick Foles got them a Super Bowl title and nearly got them to a second one, they moved on. They rallied around Wentz. They built around him this year. What did they want for him? What does he do best with? I think it's speed at wide receiver. And they went out and drafted or traded for four receivers with 4-3 speed. And that's another thing that's very similar, Kevin, between the Ravens and the Eagles, is kind of the way they're constructing these offenses around their star multi-dimensional quarterbacks. I think right now the league is really going to a spacing type of offense, speed, run after the catchability, specifically at wide receiver. And you look at, with the Ravens last year, taking Hollywood Brown. This year, taking Devin Duvernay out of Texas. Another run after the catch king. I mean, he was a track star at Texas. And with the Eagles, I mean, you spent a first-round pick instead of Justin Jefferson. You went with the burner. You went with the run after the catch guy. You went with Jalen Reagor out of TCU. You traded for Marquise Goodwin. You brought in John Hightower and Quez Watkins, 2-4-3 speed players, even on day three of the draft. So that's another thing that, Kevin, they do very similar around these quarterbacks, is they don't only want their quarterback quarterback to have speed, but they're trying to build their entire offense in that style, I think. I mean, and of course, they both have stud tight ends, too. Mark Andrews, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert.
Yeah, the way you mentioned it, the roster construction, when you look at it, is actually pretty similar, or at least more similar than you would originally expect. And something you mentioned that's really important, at least for the Ravens, is they are building that roster around Lamar Jackson. Personally, if he had gone to a different team, I don't know how they would use Lamar Jackson. The Ravens believed in Lamar Jackson and his ability as a quarterback from day one. And that's really what sets them apart from, you know, maybe another team who took him, maybe sat him for a few years, put him in an offense that was maybe set more for a Joe Flacco type of quarterback, a stand in the pocket type guy. That's not who Lamar Jackson is. Certainly he can be a pocket passer. We've seen it time and time again, especially over the last year in his MVP campaign. One of his best passes of the year came in the game against the Buffalo Bills. His really only injury play where he got technically injured was he got railed on the thigh by a Buffalo Bills player as he threw a ball to Hayden Hurst. Hayden Hurst reached over 20 miles an hour on that play. It was a dime. The Ravens have built an offense around Lamar Jackson that, you're right, incorporates that speed, but also incorporates that bully ball of a rushing offense. And I agree with you, Louie. I think that the NFL is going more towards that passing offense, whereas the speed guys, you get the burners on the outside, a good slot receiver, you know, just a lot of speed on that offense. Hollywood Brown played with the two screws in his foot the entire year. Was really playing, I think, at his best 60-70%. You get him in a year or two. You get Devin Duvernay, as you mentioned. Miles Boykin, hopefully a year or two leap for him, a really tall guy who's speedy. But then you have the Mark Ingrams, the J.K. Dobbins, the mauling offensive line. The Ravens believe in their quarterback to not only make the right reads on options, but also to make the right reads while he passes the football. So with John Harbaugh, with Ozzie Newsome, Eric DaCosta, Steve Bisciotti, they had a plan to get Lamar Jackson into the Ravens organization, and that included them not disclosing any information about how interested they were in him, which was extremely. They were happy to get their hands on him at pick 32, and I mean, the rest is history right now.
That's very true, and I think Lamar, coming out of Louisville, Kevin, I have a soft spot for Lamar Jackson because I remember watching his first ever game at Louisville against Auburn, and he was actually a backup, and he came in late in that football game and nearly brought them back. And I said, I don't know what it is, but this guy, like, he plays just like Michael Vick, and he's got that arm talent, though. What bothered me with him coming out of Louisville is that people didn't recognize. I don't know if they just weren't watching the tape and they knew that it would garner more clicks if they said outlandish things about him as a prospect. But I thought he was a more well-rounded quarterback coming out of Louisville than Josh Allen was coming out of Wyoming. And I think the Ravens have done a perfect job of surrounding him with the right skill set, you know, because I think the Eagles and Ravens really do have it figured out. And I think you see the Chiefs do this as well, the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Denver Broncos bringing in Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. A lot of those teams have really good athletic pass catching tight ends. They have, I mean, the Ravens and Eagles have two of the best offensive lines in football, right? So you have, I think, that perfect, like, complementing style of speed on the outside, and even at running back with J.K. Dobbins and Miles Sanders, two of the last second-round running backs of the past two drafts. And then you do, like you said, you have the maulers, you have the guys that are going to eat over the middle, your offensive line, and your pass-catching tight ends. So I think both teams really do have it figured out. And again, when you add guys like Hollywood Brown, Devin Duvernay, Jalen Reagor, Marquise Goodwin, it opens up so much across the middle for a Mark Andrews, for a Zach Ertz, for a J.K. Dobbins, or a Miles Sanders that I can't wait when these two teams play, man, because it's going to be, though, both offenses are two of the most fun to me to watch in the NFL.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And looking at, you know, what the Eagles had at wide receiver down the stretch last year, it was really a skeleton crew.
It was a practice squad.
So getting those guys back, you know, you get DeShaun Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, plus the influx of new talent with the Jalen Reagors and all that speed. You have Miles Sanders, who proved that he can be a three-down back in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Jordan Howard now, of course, gone. But I think the Eagles and the Ravens, again, you mentioned two of the most prolific offenses in this league. And with the Ravens having that defense, the Eagles having a lot of pieces on defense as well. You know, you can go and look at Fletcher Cox, who's been one of my favorite players in the league for a very long time. And I don't think it'll be only an offensive matchup, but maybe a defensive one as well.
Kevin, let me ask you a question before we wrap up this segment. If off the top of your head right now, one Eagle you could steal for the Ravens on offense or defense, who would that be?
It would be Fletcher Cox, 100%. Okay. Well, my crush in the draft a few years ago was Dallas Goedert, and the Eagles swooped him up.
Yeah.
But I think Fletcher Cox, you just have to look at the player that he is. Just space-eating defensive tackle, an amazing guy to get at the quarterback, you know, play in and play out. Personally, I my unpopular opinion is I think he might be the best defensive tackle in the league. And obviously for Eagles fans, that's a pretty popular opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the Aaron Donalds of the league, and you say, look at that dominance. But Fletcher Cox, watching him play, that dominance that he provides on a week-in, week-out basis of just getting past offensive linemen, bringing the quarterback down, getting pressure. It was only 3.5 sacks last year, but he does so much more. He's also a force in the run game. And with the Ravens trying to rework that defensive line, there are a lot of Eagles I could have potentially said, but I think Fletcher Cox would fill a need, and I think that he would be able to just put that Ravens defense and take them to the next level.
All right, man, we got to hit a break right here on Locked On Eagles and Locked On Ravens, but just last thought here with a Baltimore focus. Lamar Jackson, Carson Wentz, two of my favorite players in the NFL, and Kevin, I want to do some bragging real quick with you since you're a Ravens guy. I watched pretty much every Louisville game when Lamar was there. Like, there are certain college players each year. I don't have a favorite college team, so I'd watch every Texas A&M game with Johnny Manziel, every Auburn game with Cam Newton, every Oregon game with Dennis Dixon back in the day, and Lamar was that guy at Louisville. Heading into year two, when no one thought he would win a Heisman, I actually, on air, picked him to win Heisman. Like, they asked me for a dark horse candidate, and I said Lamar Jackson, and it worked. And then last year, right on Locked On Eagles, and I think it was July, I want to pull up the episode one day and show it to you. Me and my co-host Gino Camilleri, we were picking the end-of-the-year awards, and I picked Lamar to win MVP. So I have a soft spot for this guy. He could have. If I put my money where my mouth was, he could have won me a ton of money over two predictions.
Well, look, any Lamar lover here is a fan of mine. And I think that, you know, with the Ravens and everything that Lamar Jackson has done, it would be far-fetched, you know, going into year two to say, oh, look, he's going to win the MVP. But he did so much in Louis. It's wonderful to hear. I mean, Dennis Dixon, former Raven legend.
That's right.
So the fact that you had, you know,
and
the
Eagles
Lamar Jackson at Louisville.
he played the Colin Kaepernick role for you guys in the practice squad during that Super Bowl win. And for
he
us,
did.
I
did.
Honestly,
exactly right.
I honestly
exactly
thought
right.
he was going to start over for Chip Kelly in 2013 when we signed him off of your guys' practice, or the year after you guys won the Super Bowl, the Eagles signed him, and I'm thinking Dennis Dixon's going to be the starter.
They've always liked those speed quarterbacks.
Yeah.
The guys who can play in the pocket but also be those multidimensional guys. Tyrod Taylor started out in the Baltimore uniform.
That's right. And, of course, the Eagles that year as well had Michael Vick. So, I mean, this makes sense, though, Kevin. I mean, look, John Harbaugh comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree, as does Doug Peterson. So it's not really surprising at all that these two teams philosophically are very similar. And I guess it's why it makes sense that I like both teams a whole lot.
Exactly, exactly. No hate for Eagles on my end. I've always respected them as a franchise. I mean, going back, and they've just done so many good things over the years. Obviously, I've kept a close eye on that Eagles-Cowboys rivalry. I have a few friends who are Cowboys fans, but I've secretly always kind of liked the Eagles.
Well, I
a
like
tiny
that.
Tiny bit better.
Our listeners are going to like that. Kevin Ostreicher right here of Locked On Ravens and Louis DiBiase of Locked On Eagles. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And we are back here on our crossover Locked On Ravens and Locked On Eagles podcast. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Louis DiBiase. And Louis, I have to start off and just talk about what the Eagles did in 2019. Now, obviously, both the Ravens and the Eagles, not the playoff that they really wanted, obviously both getting out in the early stages. Mm-hmm. But I want to look back on this season for you, and I want to get an understanding from you of was this 2019 season a success for the Eagles?
Yeah, I actually did an entire podcast on this at the end of the season. I went back and forth. So from a standpoint of where I expected them in August to be in January, I would say no. I mean, this was a team that had Super Bowl aspirations. This was a roster that I thought was more talented than their 2017 Super Bowl title roster. I really did. I thought on offense and defense, they were stockpiled with talent. Then they face a catastrophic amount of injuries. They really did struggle on both sides of the ball, again, with injuries, with distractions on and off the field. There was a lot going on in the season. I mean, it was a very up and down, a roller coaster type year. You were 3-4, then you win two straight games, 5-4, you drop two, then you lose that game in Miami to Fitzpatrick, who destroys you. You blow a 2-score lead in the second half, so you got to win four straight games to get in. But that's where I would say it was a success, though, Kevin, is that Carson Wentz, he's been out that time of year, like in December, important football games to win a division. It's been Nick Foles manning the Eagles to those magical runs over a two-season span. Wentz was injured with a torn ACL in 2017 and a fractured back in 2018. So he finally had a run of his own. He could silence all the doubters, and he did that, man. I know it was against the Giants, the Redskins, and the Cowboys, and the Giants again. The NFC East was the weakest division, and it only took 9-7 last year. But for Carson Wentz to win four straight games, to not throw a single interception in any of those games, to throw for 4,000 yards this year without a single wide receiver surpassing 500 yards, and to make the playoffs, although he got cheap-shotted by Jadeveon Clowney and didn't get to finish that game, to me, that playoff stretch, he was playing playoff games in December, and I think that was so huge for his confidence. To do that, too, like you said in segment two, with a practice squad-like offense, his wide receivers, Locked On Ravens fans, Locked On Eagles fans, had never heard of before this year, Deontay Burnett, Robert Davis, Greg Ward. Kevin, do any of these names ring a bell to you? Boston Scott, Joshua Perkins?
a few, but you know, none off the top of my head right. That I would expect to be receivers on a playoff roster.
So in that sense, I would say it was a super successful season because you saw for a third straight year the resiliency of this team with Doug Peterson being able to turn it around when your backs are against the wall, when you face more injuries than I've ever seen a team face in a three-year span. So from that sense, I thought it was a successful season.
Yeah, the injuries are just killers, and that's what I wanted to focus on next because that really was one of the staples of the 2019 season for the Eagles. When you look at the Ravens and over the past, I guess, 5 or 6 years, they've been hit pretty hard with injuries, but I've never seen something like this 2019 Eagles team where it just seemed like week in and week out it was a key player getting injured
every position
here and then another starter getting injured there. Just how difficult was that for this Eagles team to really overcome, and how well do you think they overcame it?
It was, honestly, again, it wasn't as impressive as winning a Super Bowl in 2017, but my God, it was almost that impressive. Because you lose, I think, at every single position. Like, Lane Johnson got hurt at right tackle, Brandon Brooks at right guard, Jason Kelsey, I think, was one of, like, two starters to play all 16 games on both sides of the football, or three. Wentz, Fletcher Cox, and Jason Kelsey, like, they lost starters at least for a game or two at every position. Corner, safety, linebacker, both offensive and defensive lines. They lost their entire receiving core at the end of the year. And at running back, Jordan Howard was out for, and Darren Sproles. So the fact that they were able to go from 5-7 to 9-7 with, again, a practice squad offense and Carson Wentz and a defense that's just playing musical chairs, I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I'll cherish that 2019 team for a long time, man. That was a special group that, again, it's just that this team has done it now 2 years straight where they've got to run the table in December, and they've done it to get in. So, but again, I don't know how to explain the injuries. I don't. I mean, I thought I would never see anything like it compared to 2017 or 2018. And 2019, it topped both of it, both seasons. I thought maybe age, you know, they got a new medical staff for 2020. There's a lot of different factors, but it's hard when you see a 22-year-old get hurt because then the age take goes out the window. I honestly can't explain it, man. It was just one of the most unlucky things I've ever seen.
Yeah, and so with that 2019 season over, now a look ahead to the 2020 season begins, and I wanted to kind of get your perspective on what the Eagles did in the 2020 offseason, specifically with free agency. Now, I wanted to get your opinion here, Louis. What free agent signings for the Eagles are you most excited about? And from the guys who left, who do you think is going to hurt the most?
So I had mixed feelings about what they did this offseason. I think they're vastly improved on both sides of the football. So overall, I think it was very successful, especially in free agency on defense. You bring in Darius Slay. This team has been starved of a true CB1 since Asante Samuel in 2009. And especially a guy that, not just like a top corner, but a man-on-man corner that can shadow a top receiver or even a top tight end all game long. Like, Darius Slay's assignment is go cover Julio Jones, go cover Amari Cooper or CeeDee Lamb all game long and shut him down. And the Eagles have not had that, man. They've had, to me, the worst cornerback situation of the last decade. So for Howie Roseman to only have to give up a 3 and a 5 for, to me, an elite corner at only 29 years old, who's only got like a $3 million cap hit this year, I was ecstatic with that. One move they made that I wasn't okay with was them getting rid of Malcolm Jenkins. Like, that was the heartbeat of your team over the last 6 years, right? Yeah, 2014, they signed Malcolm Jenkins. He did so much. He was such a Swiss Army knife. In modern-day defenses, like, that's what you need now, a Malcolm Jenkins that can play single high safety, can play linebacker in the box, can roam around as a corner. He was a leader off the field. I mean, like, that was your glue guy. And the report was, okay, maybe he wants, like, top safety dollar. He didn't. The New Orleans Saints, you look at the contract he signed, all he wanted was a little bit more guaranteed money and a couple more years of locked term. So the fact that Howie was really bullish on that move, I thought was a big mistake. So I would say both decisions, that one that I loved and one that I hated, both were in the secondary. But if I had to choose between them, I'd probably take Darius Slay, man. Like, you've got to, outside of the offensive and defensive line and a quarterback, to me, you have to have a really good corner to win in the NFL nowadays. I mean, you guys know, you have three of them.
Yeah, the Ravens with their cornerbacks. I mean, it's been a strength of the team for a little while now. You look back a few years ago, the Ravens had, they were signing street free agents in the playoffs to play against the New England Patriots. But the Ravens have made sure that that doesn't happen again. Marlon Humphrey, an all-pro cornerback. Marcus Peters, acquired for Kenny Young in a fifth-round pick. Yep. Probably the steal of the trade deadline, obviously. But I think, you know, that was their big, I guess, free agent move. The free agent moves to the Ravens, there weren't a ton of them, but I think the real free agency moves for Baltimore were trading for Marcus Peters and locking him up to an extension, then also trading a fifth for Calais Campbell. I don't know how Eric DaCosta does it and convinces these teams to take fifth-round picks for Pro Bowlers, but I'll take it every single day of the week. But finally here, Louie, I wanted to talk about the draft a bit because the Eagles, according to most pundits, had one of the more controversial drafts throughout the entire NFL, passing up on Justin Jefferson to take Jalen Reagor at 21, then obviously that Jalen Hurts pick in the second round with the guy we talked about so much and Carson Wentz still on the roster. What did you think overall of the Eagles draft, specifically with those two guys?
Yeah, so the two Jalen picks back-to-back were very controversial. I have different feelings about both picks. Overall, in a nutshell, I really liked the Eagles draft class. I thought they got better on both sides of the ball. I thought they got faster, and that's something this team has really desperately needed, not only at wide receiver, but just across the board on offense and defense. Like, they needed to get faster, and I thought you did that with your additions. Let's start with the Jalen Reagor pick. I loved it, personally. I was, for Locked On Eagles listeners, they know I probably had about five rants about Justin Jefferson on the show. I just thought it would have been a very redundant pick. I think he's someone that he's going to play inside throughout his career. Where Justin Jefferson makes his money is very similar to where Zach Ertz makes his money, where Dallas Goedert makes his money, and where our second-round pick last year, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, would make his money if he decides to be anything sort of decent in 2020. So for me, what this team needed so badly, especially with DeSean Jackson getting hurt last year, and even though D-Jax is coming back, he's 34 years old, they needed speed at wide receiver. They needed to run after the catchability. If you watch Carson Wentz highlights, man, he's doing all of the work. There's not a lot of highlights where Carson Wentz just throws it deep and the receiver does the rest, or Carson Wentz throws like a little slant and a wide receiver does the rest and takes it to the house. They have not had those explosive plays for really 3 years now. So to bring in a guy like Jalen Reagor out of TCU, who I think does that and has wide receiver one upside on the outside, I was a really, really big fan of that. I think Doug Peterson's going to have a field day with Reagor on this offense. As for the Jalen Hurts pick, I hated it. To me, the only way you ever take a quarterback in the second round is if your starting quarterback now is either 35 years old or higher, or your quarterback's like Mitchell Trubisky, right, where you don't believe in him. If you have Lamar Jackson, or if you have an elite 27-year-old like Carson Wentz, to me, you are not spending that much value on a backup quarterback, on a what-if. Basically, because if all things go right, that 53rd overall pick that you made is never going to see the field. So I understand Carson Wentz has gotten hurt the last 3 years. Personally, I think they're not predictive injuries. I don't think it's something you can bank on to continue to happen. He played all 16 games last year. Trust me, I get the value of a backup quarterback. Nobody knows that more than the Eagles. I mean, Nick Foles won them a Super Bowl and almost got them to another one the year after. I get it. I've seen it with Michael Vick, with AJ Feely, with Jeff Garcia. So I know. But I would have much rather did like what the Dallas Cowboys did and brought in Andy Dalton, or have the situation the Ravens do with RG3. Because to me, Jalen Hurts, first off, you have no idea what he's even going to be at the next level. And also, even if he's good, like a second round pick, like you bring an expectation with that. You bring a distraction there. And I don't like it. I feel like it's a cynical way of building your team. I feel like you're betting against who you have right now in Carson Wentz, who wasn't happy with the pick, by the way. And I saw the players on the board. Christian Fulton, Willie Gay Jr., Joshua Uche, Jeremy Chin. There was just so many good prospects that you could get for a cheap four-year contract that would help you right now and down the road that you passed on for a backup. So overall, even if he becomes your Taysom Hill and you can move him for a pick down the road, I don't think Jalen Hurts, unless like disaster scenario turns out where Carson Wentz just isn't the guy, and I think that's nuts to even think that. Unless that's the case, I don't think Hurts is ever going to meet the value of a 53rd overall pick. I just don't. I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah, for the Eagles, I would have liked them maybe to see them go and address the secondary with that pick. Maybe go and get another linebacker. As you mentioned, Willie Gay Jr. was available. Other guys slipped. Malik Harris and the Ravens were able to get in the late third round. I think the Eagles, even if they spend that pick on Malik Harrison, who went in the third round, I still think that's value in the pick for me. You're right. You're banking on injuries. You can't guarantee that a certain player is going to get injured again in the NFL. Right. Obviously, a player can get injured on any single play in this league. The play is violent. It's a very violent sport. But drafting, you know, pretty much a doomsday plan. And you mentioned that Carson Wentz wasn't very happy with the pick. It feels like, you know, I don't think it was technically as bad as what the Packers did with Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. But you might be signaling to that guy, we don't believe in your ability to stay healthy, continue to play at a high level through injury. So we're going to draft this guy just in case, but you're still the guy. That doesn't send the right message to me. So I'm right there with you, Louis.
Well, that's the thing, man, is like, even though he kept telling Carson Wentz, like, you're our guy. I mean, the move itself, your actions, even if you didn't mean to send that message, like, you're sending that message, maybe not even to Carson Wentz, but now you've got the national media talking again. And look, for a quarterback in Carson Wentz, for as good as he is, he's had to deal with more adversity than any player I've seen in a first, you know, 3-4 season span of a career. For a guy that good, the amount of stuff he's had to deal with, I think, is just, it's crazy. With Nick Foles, with all the crazy narratives about him, it was finally his team. And again, I'm cool with having a top backup. I mean, when you have a play style like Wentz has, like Lamar Jackson does, you're prone more so to get hit in space like Jadeveon Clowney hit him. And or in 2017, like, yeah, it's a fluke injury where you get hit twice and your body is, you know, going in separate directions and you tear all the ligaments in your knee. But yeah, that your play style, you're more susceptible to that. But for me, it's not like Sam Bradford. It wasn't a soft tissue injury every single season. Like, these were fluke incidences that I don't think you can predict moving forward. So I don't know, man. I get the value of a backup quarterback, but it's just at 53 overall, it brings an expectation. It brings a distraction. And you're passing up on really damn good prospects that can help you at other positions, that can help Carson Wentz.
Yeah, exactly what we were talking about with building around the guys you have on the roster, especially guys who are in their prime. So with Carson Wentz, with Lamar Jackson, who I think is really not even entering his prime yet, he's still learning. But for Wentz, you have a 27-year-old who I think, you know, is going to come and hopefully he's going to get weapons around him. They did that with Jalen Reagor, and they have DeSean Jackson. I think that 53rd pick, I think it could have been spent a little bit better, but that's all I have joining me here on the show to do this crossover. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, Kevin, awesome stuff, man. I look forward to Eagles Ravens this year. It's two teams, of course, with the Eagles I love to watch, but Baltimore, I would say, is my AFC team, man. I was watching a lot of Ravens last year, and who knows, these two teams could be playing in an even bigger game in 2020. So I appreciate having you on and you having me on this crossover edition, and, you know, hopefully we'll talk down the road again during the regular season.
Definitely. It was a pleasure, and I think that we're going to be talking again very soon.
Absolutely. So real quick, let's give our plugs. You can follow me on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE. Of course, you can subscribe to Locked On Eagles on any platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. Kevin, if you want to give your shameless plugs.
And for me, my shameless plugs, I write for RavensWire for USA Today. You can find that at ravenswire.usatoday.com. Also, the Locked On Ravens Twitter is at Locked On Ravens, and my personal account at KOstriker34.
All right, man. Good stuff as always.
Yeah, thank you for having me.